You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Some dogs look at you like you're insane.
Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours.
We're killing our dogs. Wild and Woolly welcome wagon.
The outside of a dog is really, really good. But the inside of a person.
Centricity.
Hello, and welcome to episode 83 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have the legal advice that every dog owner needs from Justice for Dogs founder Anne Harpwood.
Get a DNA profile and you get your DNA certificate, and then if your dog stands accused of something, you turn around and say, well, present the DNA evidence to prove it was my dog.
We also have the Dogcast Radio News and the first part of a new fiction feature. But before all that, I recently came across a different approach to raising puppies. And when I researched it on the internet, I couldn't really find a lot about it. I posted on various forums and had a fairly negative response from breeders. Then I found an article by Cairn Terrier breeder Jerry Wolfe. I won't steal her thunder. I'll leave Jerry to explain her approach. And we start at the beginning with what she does with her puppies right from the start.
Well, I let the mom do 90% of the work. Mm. If you go back and you look at pack dynamics in wild canines, especially like in wolf packs, There is an alpha female. She's the only one allowed to have puppies. And the rest of the pack helps her raise those puppies so she can go out and hunt. So using that idea, and the puppies eat whatever the mother or the pack brings back to eat. And they start eating when they're ready to eat.
Yeah.
So to me, it made much more sense to when the mom was ready to allow other dogs close to her puppies, it was fine. And when the puppies were ready to eat, they could start eating the same food mom was eating.
Yeah, yeah.
It's worked that way for a couple million years, I think. Or however long, I don't have a reference in front of me, but forever. As long as there's been canines, that's the way it's worked.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what got me into doing more research on wild canines and how they raise their offspring. And seeing so many people, it was like, oh, it's time to wean the puppies. So they put them on Pablum, on human rice baby food, and separated from them from the mother and made her wean them early, and it just didn't make sense.
No. So you are very much guided then by what the bitch wants to do.
Yes.
I've read your article about sort of, how you let your dogs raise their puppies, and sort of one of the first things you say is obviously you establish yourself as pack leader, and then you kind of establish where you want the bitch to have the puppies, don't you, to actually give birth?
Yes.
Yeah.
And which is usually in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And just so that I can keep an eye on things.
Yeah. I would say, I'm guessing you don't get much sleep then around this time.
I've learned to.
And so then, obviously, we start off with the bitch and the puppies in your bedroom. And then You will let other dogs in when the bitch finds that acceptable, won't you?
She'll let us know when other dogs can come in to visit. Some dogs she doesn't want close to her puppies. The next dog she might want them in. I've even had males that were allowed to go in and help her clean the puppies and babysit so she could go outside. But I usually, I let her pick
Yeah.
who she will allow with her puppies. You know, they read each other much better than we do.
Mm. So it's sort of based on, as you say, her reading of the other dogs and her relationship with them, whether she will let them buy her babies kind of thing.
Yes.
Oh, which I guess is, that's a very human concept, isn't it? Because there are some people that you'd think, yeah, that's a suitable babysitter, and others that you go, nope, they're not coming anywhere near the baby.
Yep. Right. Exactly. You know, usually, you know, the old saying, mother knows best.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And as you say, obviously you've researched this, and sort of, how long had you been breeding dogs when you started to do this? Because it must take quite a bit of confidence to begin with.
Well, I was born and raised on a ranch out in the country, you know, and we had barn dogs and we had barn cats. And my mother raised chihuahuas since before I was born. And so it was something I was born into, you know, and so some things you learn whether you know you're learning them at the time or not.
Yes.
With Karens, I have been breeding for the last 30 years on my own, you know, away from my parents.
Yeah. So you've got the experience to prove that, you know, your methods work, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And actually, that article has been reprinted probably in every language in the world. Mm. And by many different breed clubs have used it in their newsletter. Boxers, Dobermans, the Australian Cattle Dogs here in the U.S., the Psyllium Club has used it.
Yeah, yeah. See, one of the things that struck me sort of with Cairns and with, you know, to an extent with any terriers, you're not dealing with a pushover of a dog, you know, which, you know, if somebody had this theory or, you know, this way of working with Labradors, you know, I could imagine, well, it's not going to necessarily transfer too well because, you know, Labradors are big softies. But the fact that it's working with something as characterful as a Cairn, it obviously does work, doesn't it?
I think it works better with terriers in general, simply because terriers have this, I'm going to prove I'm the tough guy first and put up with the consequences.
Mm.
And it's just their little mentality, which a lot of people equate to being aggressive, and they're not being aggressive. They're just being terriers.
Mm.
But they have to know how to read other dogs. If they have been raised by humans solely and never been had any kind of experience with other dogs other than their mother and siblings, they can't learn how to read other dogs.
Mm.
So by allowing the mother to be there to supervise while the other dogs are around, they have her as their support base to interfere if it needs to be interfered, but they learn not so much to be the one, to be the first one to come up to their toes and challenge another dog. I have sold so many people that puppies to people, you know, as pets, you know, and they go, oh, we took him out to the beach for the first time today. And you wouldn't believe it. This big old huge golden retriever comes running up the beach and pounces at him. And he immediately laid down and rolled on his back in a submissive posture.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they should do.
Mm.
Instead of taking it as a head-on challenge. You know, obviously the Golden wasn't a threat. He was just a bigger, happier dog coming up to say hello. And it's better to roll on your back and be submissive than to get into his face and tell him to back off, which is going to cause a fight.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what I find really interesting, one of the things, because as you say, it's essential that every dog learns, you know, how to read other dogs and how to be a dog and how to interact. And, you know, it's fascinating. You're letting adult dogs be around puppies, and you're saying that you get that very useful correction, don't you?
Yes. You know, for so long, we have taken over as being the parent to our puppies, to isolate, to protect them from other dogs. And it's, I equate it to what would happen if you took a group of five children and took the mother out of the situation when they were a year old, just when they were getting up to be toddlers, and had them raised by a chimpanzee. A chimp could supply the food and watch over them, but they would learn chimp mannerisms, not human mannerisms. Then, when they're 5 years old, sent them off to preschool to interact with other humans and other children. They wouldn't know how. But that's what we've done for so many years with our dogs and our puppies. Yeah. You know, we've gotten way too overprotective to the other extreme.
Yeah. And I mean, it is very useful because, I mean, one of the things I know that I mean, we brought a puppy into our house, already having an existing dog. And, I mean, they do cut the younger dogs a lot of slack, don't they? They don't, you know, overcorrect. It's always sort of an appropriate, well, usually an appropriate level, or if anything, a little bit soft, isn't it?
Yeah, and if mom's going to correct them, you know, even if you have a litter of puppies that are, like, up 6, 8 weeks old, and they're rough and tumble, and they're learning how hard they can bite and how hard they shouldn't bite, you know, mom's right in there in the fray going, hey, that's inappropriate. Stop.
Mm.
You know, she'll roll them on her back and hold them down.
Yeah.
But it's their mother doing it, so they're not afraid of her, and they realize it's okay to be corrected. You know, yeah. It's a part of the, you know, it's like with some children, you know, you correct them and they do this whole meltdown thing.
Yes. And as you say, they need, you know, some dogs do have a problem with being told no, or, you know, even from a human. So to learn from an early age, well, you know, I'm not actually the top dog. There are going to be situations that, you know, I'm going to have to show submission and give in. That's a very important lesson, isn't it?
Yes. And especially, like, if you have a litter with a singleton puppy, they are the worst because they really do feel that they are the center of the world. And again, with that terrier mentality, that's very bad.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Now, it sounds like you set up a wonderful environment for your puppies, sort of once they're able to get, is it just past 4 to 5 weeks old, and they're able to get out and about, and you set up your yard, a sort of puppy play yard. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, sure. It kind of looks like a junkyard. One of the things I've had is an old-fashioned milk can, the big steel milk cans that they used to ship milk.
Mm.
That's in the play yard, and they treat it like a little tunnel. They crawl in and out, and they get up on top of it and lay on it. I try to get it so it won't roll, but we have, like, a little trampoline, and that doesn't really bounce. It's canvas, but, you know, some of the puppies crawl up on top. Some of them sleep underneath. They play bite underneath each other. You know, they play king of the mountain. Plastic soda bottles, old lawn chairs, bricks.
Yeah.
But, you know, it gives them something to do. It gives them confidence at climbing, you know, and if they fall off, you know, nothing's too awfully high, but if they fall and roll, you know, mom will look and go, huh, you're okay.
Mm. Oh, it's smashing. And you say as well that it's important to let the puppies establish a pecking order.
Yeah, among themselves. Because there's always going to be a pecking order, no matter where they go in life.
Mm. So they need to be able to sort of find, you know, establish with other dogs where they are.
Yes.
Mm.
Mm. You know, and not everybody's always going to be top dog.
No.
And it's better to learn it when you're young than it is to learn it when you're 4 or 5 months old.
Yes.
And go, what? Who said I wasn't top dog?
Yes. I thought I was up till now, yeah. Yeah. So, but you sort of allow them room to do that, don't you? And you keep the older dogs away for a while and let the puppies just sort themselves out. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I make sure mom's always around to help sort it out. Because she will step in and say, okay, you've gone overboard, back off.
Mm.
And a lot of times my babysitter dogs do the same thing. You know, if mom's tired of putting up with them, you know, one of the older dogs will be there and the puppies will get into a fight. And they're there to break it up, saying, okay, you've gone overboard, stop. I know I have friends that, you know, have gotten dogs from people and two brothers, and they absolutely hated each other.
Mm.
But they were always separated as puppies.
Mm.
You know, before 8 weeks old, they started, neither one was allowed to be dominant over the other.
Mm.
And one just recently passed away. He was like 15. But, you know, they never got to establish which one was dominant over the other. And if they learn that at a young age, my males run together unless I have a girl in season, and my boys don't fight.
Mm.
I really believe it's because they learn at an early age that you don't have to fight. You know, it's, you know, I'm the leader, that's it, and we'll go on from there.
Yeah.
But they do have to learn where they are, and they got to learn it early. It's okay to be corrected. It's okay for someone else to dominate you. You know, and it's not dominating so much as beating up.
Mm, yeah.
It's just, it's okay for someone to be a little bit more dominant.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, I mean, it really interests me, because what you're saying is if you let them have this kind of freedom and let them have, you know, what we'd class as sort of rough and tumble, I guess, and sort of a bit of that when they're younger, it doesn't turn them into rougher dogs. It actually turns them into dogs that can read other dogs better and are sort of calmer and better socialized.
Yes. There is, what is her name? Gal from Finland.
Is it Turid Ruglas or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, and all of her books are based on getting back to letting the dogs communicate with each other and teaching them how to communicate with another dog. You know, that's how she does a whole lot of her rehabilitations. Mm. Even the big, the Dog Whisperer, who's very popular on TV here, that's his whole basis, is on rehabilitating dogs, is to have a pack leader and to get the dogs to start reading the other dog's body language so fights don't occur, so that all of these inappropriate behaviors occur.
Mm.
Even separation anxiety, you know, it has been cured with having a strong pack leader.
Mm.
and knowing where they fit in the scheme of things. And, you know, and it's something, it's so much, like even learning a foreign language, if you learn it at a very young age, you learn it quicker and better than you ever will than if you were an adult.
Yes.
And tried to learn.
Mm. Something else, having talked sort of about males there, and because having come across this idea of letting the dogs mix more together, you know, I've discussed it with other people, and so many breeders have said, "Oh no, I couldn't let my male in with the puppies," you know. And one of the myths that you sort of debunk is, if you let the male in with the puppies, he'll kill them.
Yeah, no, it's an old wives' tale.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the males that I have, his handler used to hate it when I would tell this story.
Yeah.
But this is Teddy, who was the top winning, who still is the top winning Karen of all time.
Yeah.
When there was a litter of puppies, he was the one. In fact, friends that owned him, if they had a litter, their oldest female knew that Teddy loved puppies. She would go in and nurse them, get out of the box. Teddy would hop in the box, change their diapers, so to speak, and babysit with them for hours.
Aww.
And then when it was time for them to eat again, he would hop out of the box and Bishu would jump in and feed the babies, you know, and she was just lazy. You know, she didn't want to have to do all of that, so she gave it to Teddy to do.
Mm.
That's my entertainment in life. Sitting there watching animals interact with each other. Much better than television.
Jerry has learned so much from allowing her dog's space to behave naturally and watching. You can hear the second half of her interview in the next episode of Dogcast Radio. You can find out more about Jerry and her Cairn Terriers and read her article about raising puppies with excellent temperaments at her website, rose-croft.com, which there's a link to on the Dogcast Radio site. Dogs instinctively know the exact moment their owners will wake up. Then they wake them 10 minutes sooner. Unknown. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Journey, Part 1. Written and read by Julie Hill. The Weimaraner puppy sat on the floor in his new home. He looked around. He whined because he missed the familiarity and reassurance of his mother and brothers and sisters. He wagged his little tail to show he was friendly to this strange new pack he found himself amongst. They gave him food and water. Then the children played with him until, exhausted, he fell asleep on someone's lap, contented and safe. The first few days were a blur of visitors who petted and played with him. Most bought a toy to add to his collection, and his proud family treated him to a luxury bed, fancy collars and leads, even a designer food bowl. He had cost them a fortune, and he deserved to be spoiled, so why not? After a while, some days were long and lonely for him. He passed the long hours his family spent at work, school or leisure, alone in the kitchen. He disliked the solitude and the confinement, but he found ways to amuse himself. Things to chew, to scratch and dig at, things to pull and push. And when the time came that he needed to empty his bladder and bowels, he found a place to do that, too. When his humans returned, he wagged his tail and leapt at them in excitement. He did not understand why they shouted at him and turned him out into the garden. He began to spend most days in the garden, too. They bought him a top-of-the-range kennel where he could shelter from the weather. But he preferred to lie as close to the back door as possible, so he could detect the moment his people came home. As his body grew, so did his instinct. Though he came to hate the garden, as it symbolised being separated from his pack, it was his pack's territory, and he defended it as best he could, barking at the sounds of neighbours and traffic nearby. He also howled, and though his pack seldom heeded his heartfelt plea for them to return to him, he persisted. Some of the time he dug in the dirt or slept, but he gave full vent to his misery. A lone wolf might be happy, but a dog gives his heart to his family. The evenings were what he lived for, as then he was allowed into the house with the people he loved. Through lack of exercise, his body was full of unspent energy, on top of his natural exuberance for life. He leapt around them to show he was happy. He jumped at them to lick their faces and show he knew his place, and to appease them into spending more time with him. He followed them from room to room, nudging their hands for fuss and wanting to be involved in everything. He got under their feet and in their way at every turn. He was too big, too tall, too clumsy for them. Too often, his enthusiastic behaviour resulted in him being sent back outside. On weekend walks at the local park, his mind was sent reeling by the amazing influx of stimuli. Scents of new dogs, new people, strange scents of wild animals, foodstuffs, anything and everything unfamiliar sent him scurrying this way and that. He wanted to meet everyone and explore everything, make the most of this great time running free. His people's calls for him to return were ignored. When they eventually managed to grasp his collar, usually after a wild chase, which he thoroughly enjoyed, he was scolded. Since he knew the scolding was coming, he would double his efforts to evade them. At 8 months old, he was an adult dog with a mind that was slowly catching up. He loved his people, but was blighted by his inability to please them. He had no training, and still occasionally soiled in the house if they forgot to let him out. His family were thoroughly fed up with him. He was no longer cute and appealing. He was gangly and unruly. He was not at all like the dog in the film that had inspired them to get him, nor like the well-behaved dogs they saw in the park. For goodness sake, he didn't seem to understand a word of English, stupid dog. Enough was enough. Though they didn't lack money or resources, they felt ashamed of their failure over their dog, and they were unwilling to seek help, finding him a new home. He was put into the car late one evening. His tail kept up a rapid beat in the back of the car, as he loved the car. It always took him to the park, and even once to the beach, which he had liked even better. He had never been in the car at night, though, and it all looked so different. After a long drive, the car pulled into a lay-by. His bed was put on the ground, and his leash was tied to a tree, and the car pulled quickly away. The dog stood alert, watching the car grow smaller. He wagged his tail and barked. What new game was this? He stood even after the car disappeared. Then he sat. A puzzled whine escaped him. His bed smelled comfortingly of home. He curled up on it, nose to tail, though the leash was tied too short to allow this manoeuvre to be comfortable and caused his collar to dig into his neck. Nose down, eyes watching, hoping, he waited. The children were told he had gone to live somewhere with a bigger garden for him to run around in, and they were distracted with the promise of a rabbit. The next morning, several cars drove past the dog, apparently without noticing or caring, until his good Samaritan appeared. With the honesty innate in dogs, he rolled on his back, licking the hand that untied his leash, appealing for help. "Come on, boy," said a kindly voice. "Come with me." This story concludes in the next episode of Dogcast Radio. There is no snooze button on a dog who wants breakfast. Unknown. It seems that the law relating to dogs is a complicated issue. If you suddenly find yourself in legal trouble regarding your dog, you really need someone to turn to who is able to help you through a potential minefield, understand your rights, and hopefully achieve the outcome you want. In the UK, Anne Harpwood is the woman to turn to. She has helped hundreds of dog owners, and of course dogs, in need of help. And there's a lot of really useful advice in this interview, wherever you live. Here's Anne to tell us about Justice for Dogs.
It's a charity that I started in 93 when the Dangerous Dogs Act came in 91, which actually reversed the burden of proof, which is totally in opposition to the European Convention on Human Rights, where the first requirement or the first protocol is the presumption of innocence. And in the case of the DDA, you were guilty. And you had to prove that you weren't. So I raised the money to take the government to Strasbourg, which I did, and found an international barrister to represent us. And we sadly failed, but it wasn't quite such a dreadful defeat, because at the end of the day, it went to vote as opposed to being thrown out straight away. But after it was all over, I was left with quite a lot of money. I'd raised £30,000 and I'd managed to only spend 18 of it.
Oh,
wow. No, 12 of it. So I had £18,000 left. So I decided that the best thing to do, rather than divide it between charities, was to apply to the Charity Commission for Justice for Dogs to become a registered charity. They wouldn't do it in the beginning because we were challenging, you're not allowed to challenge existing legislation. So we eventually, it took a long time, took about 9 months for me to convince the commission that no, I wouldn't defy the government, which is a bit of a joke, isn't it? Because I'm defying it all the time. But at the end of the day, I can give advice to people on what their rights are about Dangerous Dogs Act matters, but I'm not allowed to get involved in the actual case or what have you. So, you know, that's basically what we did. And it's really grown from there. We eventually got registered status in 96, and it's growing by the minute.
Yes.
But it's to provide free advice, legal advice and assistance to dog owners who've got problems. And that could be a bad veterinary surgeon, a bad neighbour, a bad policeman, a bad local authority, a bad dog warden. Somebody's bought a puppy from someone who turns out to be a bad breeder. Breeders sold a puppy to somebody that turned out to be a bad owner. Everything to do with dog ownership, basically.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah. So basically, as you say, if a dog owner has any kind of legal problem,
if they've got a dietary problem, whether they've got a behavioural problem, we've got about 16 legal consultants and 6 veterinary surgeons who all support the work of the charity, and 2 or 3 behaviourists, and quite a few of the Kennel Club registered clubs are members of the charity as well, but not as many as I would like, unfortunately. And as I try to say to everybody, look on it as insurance. I mean, where could you go to a solicitor for £20, which covers you for a whole year?
Yes.
You couldn't do it.
No.
And quite a lot of solicitors actually phone me asking for advice. And I would say to them, how much are you going to pay me?
Mm.
Which, of course, they don't. Because they don't know. Because there's very, very few solicitors out there that actually understand that in law, a dog is not a dog, it's property, it's goods.
Mm.
And it has to be looked at that way, sad as it is. But, yeah, that's basically what it is. Anybody that's got a problem, if I don't know, I know somebody that does. And that's the way it works.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, that is very shocking when you find that out. And I had heard that before. You probably know about the lady with the poodles, the poodle martyrs,
yes,
that were taken.
Yes.
You know, and that was where I found out that the police had said to her, you know, your dog is just like evidence in any case. It's just like a spanner or a hammer or something.
That's right. It's evidence, yeah. But the problem is that people out there don't know, and I do need to get this across to people, that everybody should make sure they've got a DNA profile for their dog. It's such a simple thing, and it costs such a little thing. If you go to your veterinary surgeon will take a swab from inside the cheek, just like they do with people, and get a DNA profile, and you get your DNA certificate. And then, if your dog stands accused of something, you turn around and say, well, present the DNA evidence to prove it was my dog, because here's my dog's DNA profile. If it matches, I'll hold my hands up. But 99 times out of 100, it won't.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing that I'm getting people being hounded by dog wardens who say their dogs have defecated in a park. And they've said, but my dog didn't. I said, well, tell them to get a DNA evidence to prove it's your dog. Go and get a DNA profile. Number of people that say, that dog bit me, where that dog might not have been even on the scene. Or it might have been the person's own dog. So I say to everybody, if there's an altercation when you're out with your dog and somebody else's dog, and somebody says that it was your dog that did it, first of all, ask for a photograph of the bite, and then measure it with your dog's jaw. Chances are it won't match anyway. And make sure you've got DNA evidence obtained from the site of the injury, and produce your dog's. That's going to sort it out.
Yes.
And gradually it's getting through, but if you can get that through on your program, so much the better. It's so easy to get it done. It's just, all it is, it's a swab. You haven't got to take blood, nothing like that. Just a saliva swab and get a DNA profile sorted. And if the person's got a pedigree dog registered with the Kennel Club for £15 will send them the kit to take along to their vet to get it done. And that's it, so easy. And then it goes to a laboratory in Germany, and they've got to pay their own vet's fees, of course, but at the end of the day, that's their security blanket.
And of course, that would help as well. If your dog goes missing, there is talk of sort of identifying them through DNA as well, isn't there?
That's right, that's right. It's so important.
I mean, it seems like, you know, when it happens to you, well, if it happens to you, and as you said, it's, you know, it's rare, but it's one of those...
It's the end of the world.
Yeah, absolutely, it's a nightmare scenario. And so... The thing is, this, for example, like the poodle martyrs that were just taken with no evidence and held for months.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
okay, it's a rare occurrence. But it should horrify every single dog owner in the UK, because you stand the same risk, don't you?
Of course you do. And it's not only that, it's these bad breeders. I mean, I've had a poor chap on the phone who, and I do get very angry with people who don't bother to go and do the research when they're thinking of buying a pedigree dog. And he's been and bought a puppy from a bad breeder. It's her very first litter. And the father's a white boxer. Well, hey-ho, you know, you don't have that in a breeding program.
No.
She's not a registered breeder, so he doesn't have any paperwork and the puppy's dead. And she's told him to... blankety blank off. And if she's not running a business, then unfortunately getting her under the Sale of Goods Act is going to be difficult, but it's worth a shot through the Small Claims Court. But it's going to take a year.
Yeah.
And it doesn't minimize the heartache.
No.
I mean, yes, things do happen, but at the end of the day, if you're a good breeder and you have your puppies checked before they leave you to go to their new home, and then it's always, I haven't bred a litter now since 2002, always a requirement, the contract which I've drawn up, and they both, we all have to sign, so everybody knows just what goes on, what the puppy's pedigree is. It's insured, registered with the Kennel Club. Take it to your own veterinarian. If your own vet is not happy with anything, then the puppy comes straight back to me with the vet's report and you have your money back. And that's how it should be. There's no question about nothing to do with me now I've sold it. Well, not as far as I'm concerned. You have a moral responsibility for the whole of that dog's life. That's my view. Even if that dog lives till 10, I would expect somebody to phone me that owned a dog they bought for me and say, can you help me? I might have a bit of a problem. It may not be anything to do with anything I've done, but I do consider that I should be there to help if I need to be. But it doesn't happen. I mean, one girl also bought a German Shepherd and was told it was going to be a show dog, and within 5 hours it was dead. It went blind and had a brain tumour, and they told her it was a show dog, and it wasn't even Kennel Club registered. So how foolish are people to go and buy some? Well, we didn't know. And I said, but that makes me cross. Because you should have gone to the library, got a book on the breed that you're interested in. That would tell you about the Kennel Club. You then ring the Kennel Club. You get a list of breeders and secretaries of breed clubs. So you can do your homework. You have would then, a judge would say, well, I'm very sorry for you, madam, but you've been very silly. So a lot of people are silly.
Yes.
Very silly. And a lot of people think that it doesn't matter if their dog is out. No dog should be off lead in a public place unless there are designated areas. No dog should be out without a disc on its collar in case it got lost. It's always a good idea to microchip or tattoo so that you've got a record somewhere. Although I don't like either of those, but then, you know, I'm very vigilant where my dogs are 24/7. But, you know, it's not enough to say, like a woman rang me up, she said, well, she's never done it before. I said, well, she shouldn't have done it now.
No.
No. Well, she went into a field and there were some sheep. She didn't do any damage. But there's never been sheep there before. Well, what's that got to do with the price of fish?
Mm.
She shouldn't have gone in the field anyway.
Yeah.
And she should have been under control, even off the lead. She should have been. You should be able to know that if you called your dog, it would come.
Mm.
Instantly come. There can't be any, in today's society, Julie, there cannot be any room for mistakes.
Mm.
There can't be. People say, the postman comes onto my property. And I say, well, the postman doesn't have an automatic right on your property if you don't want him there. Nobody does. Nobody has right of access to anybody's private property without permission or a court order. And that goes for the police as well.
Mm.
They don't have a right. Only Her Majesty's Customs and Excise officers can go onto property without any authority at all.
Gosh.
But police can't.
Mm.
So they're breaking the law if they march up somebody's path and they're told to move and they don't.
Mm.
So I always say, look, put your letterbox on the outside of your gate.
Yes.
Keep your gate firmly locked and a bell so that, yes, all right, if you're in a bad area with lots of unruly children, that's not clever. But nevertheless, that's what you must do.
Mm.
And make sure that people can't walk onto your property, without your permission. And without you going to let them down. I know it's a nuisance, but, in today's society, we have to protect our dogs now. It's not the other way around.
Yes.
We really
definitely do. Mm.
And if only everybody would think about it, but they don't. I had a woman that rang me, and she was absolutely verbally abusive to me because I told her she had been very stupid. She thought it was perfectly acceptable for her Rottweiler bitch to jump up at people in the street because, quotes, she was only being friendly.
Oh.
And the police had warned her.
Mm.
And she thought that was terrible. Why shouldn't she? I said, but if the person she jumped at was a child and knocked it in the road, what do you think would happen then? And so she swore at me. And I said, well, I'm not surprised your dog's got problems with you as its owner. And then I got a four-page letter with every other word was a swear word. So you can't please all the people all the time. But, how foolish.
Yes, yeah.
How foolish. But, and the woman that rang me and she said her German Shepherd bitch had bitten somebody at the bus stop. And I said, well, how did she get onto the road? She said, I haven't got any gates on the drive. I said, but why not? She said, well, my husband took them.
Mm.
I said, well, so you let your dogs out the front, but you haven't got the gates. Yeah, well, he took them. And she turned out she got six dogs, and she let them out in the front garden with no gates.
Oh, dear.
And she seemed to think that that was her husband's fault.
Mm.
I mean, I had one girl that rang me up who wanted to sue the local council.
Mm.
And I said, yes. She said, injuries to my dog. So thinking on my feet, I say, thinking, well, was it a dust cart? Do you know, it knocked the dog over? Or you don't know quite what's coming.
No, yeah.
And I said, well, in what way did the council injure your dog? And she said, well, it was dark and he ran into a park bench. And I said, well, was it moving at the time? And she got very upset with me.
Oh, dear. Yes, I can just imagine the park bench jumped out on my dog.
Yes, my dog. Somebody had told her that the bench shouldn't have been there.
Oh, crap.
I said, well, why not? It was probably a fixture.
Mm. Oh, dear. Yeah. Are a lot of the problems that people contact you with, do you find that sort of prevention would have been better than cure, and it's something they could...
Well,
have...
always. Mm. You see, everybody... a woman that rang me whose small son had let the dog out while she was taking the rubbish out. And I said, well, what were you doing allowing your small son to let the dog out?
Mm.
Well, I can't watch him every time. I said, but why not?
Yeah.
The thing that is so important in dog ownership is that you know where your dog is always. If you should never let your dog go to the front door when you open the door. Never.
Mm.
That's a big mistake. Always have a barrier between the front door and where you're going through to the front door. Or have your dog in another room.
Mm.
You've got to think on your feet when you've got dogs, especially if you've got more than one dog, because two dogs will start thinking about each other and become a team, and three becomes a pack.
Mm.
But so many people don't understand how to manage a pack or a team.
Mm.
And you need to learn to read your dog. I can read my dogs. I know what they're thinking before they've even thought it themselves.
Mm.
It's like with children. Whatever it is you're doing up there, stop it.
Yes.
You
know. Well, it sounds as if you're helping a lot of people, Anne.
Oh, I get between 1,200 and 1,500 calls a year. It really is manic.
I imagine you're a formidable opponent, really.
Yes, yes, very much so. Yes. I'm coming back next time as a bulldog, I think. I think so. Because once I've got hold of a really bad problem, I won't let go.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people in court, and I've supported a lot of people through the courts, and we always win. We always win.
Yeah.
Excellent. And I've got a lot of solicitors who threaten me, and I say I see you in court sometime.
Mm. Yes. If people have got a problem, how should they contact you?
They just contact me on my phone number. They don't have to be a member of the charity, but the commission do say that they do expect people needing advice, they have got to become a member. And why shouldn't they? They've got that supporting the work for other people as well. Mm. I don't get paid. I'm a trustee. They are allowed to earn salaries now, but as I tell my co-trustees, you can't afford me, so I'll carry on working for nothing, because all our money will be gone. But, you know, I say we do ask everybody to join that needs help, and we ask people to join that don't need our help, if just because they believe in what we're doing. The bills have to be paid. But at the end of the day, what makes me cross, if people want my help and they want me to write a letter for them or help them fill up court forms, I say to them, well, you know, you'll have to join the charity, so they join. And when it's time for their membership to be renewed, they don't renew it. Mm. So they pay their £6, as it was, to get all the help, but they don't renew it afterwards. Yeah, and that, to me, is a really sad indictment of the majority of people in the country today.
Mm.
And then I've got the other end of the spectrum, the people who've never needed any help but hold fundraising dues and matches and send nice cards and, you know what I mean, and promote the word of the work of the charity. And they're the people that keep us going.
Yeah.
For all the people that don't, basically. But really, you know, if every flipping dog owner in this country joined this charity, A, I could go to the Bahamas and leave somebody else to do the work for a fortnight, because I could take some time off. And we would be able to, we would have the muscle to deal with some of these wretched people that are throwing their weight about and shouldn't be.
Mm.
I mean, I had one poor girl who, for reasons best known to herself, decided it was totally acceptable to pay £3,000 out for a Dobe de Bordeaux puppy.
Mm.
Never had a Dobe de Bordeaux before. If she'd gone to a breed club, she'd have paid probably £1,500. She paid £3,000. And within 24 hours, the puppy was fitting.
Mm.
And eventually had to be put down.
Oh.
And the breeder said she wasn't going to give her money back till we stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her she'd got 14 days to refund it. And in the meantime, I was going to trading standards, to the Inland Revenue, to the benefit agency, to let them know that she probably was earning money she shouldn't be.
Yes.
And within 48 hours, I got a check. Please don't contact me again because my father's ill.
Oh, dear. Yes, well, that excuses
But you it. See, needs must when the devil drives.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that is it, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
That's it. I will do whatever it takes to get justice done.
Mm.
I really will.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got on. All I say to all my friends, if I disappear, don't bother looking. I'm probably holding up a bridge somewhere in London.
Oh, Anne.
Well, at least I've given you a laugh.
You have. What's your vision for the future, for Justice for Dogs?
My vision for the future is, of course, the impossible dream. It is a kennel club that really does believe in a better world for pedigree dogs by listening to the people who know what they're talking about and not themselves, and I mean that honestly, who should be talking to the people who know their breed inside out and know what is best for their breed, the people that are respected within their breed because of their knowledge, because of their commitment. Those are the people that should be monitoring the kennel club, not the kennel club monitoring us, because that just isn't on. They've made a bad job of it over the last 100-odd years. And I would like to see the police learn about compassion when it comes to dogs and try not to jackboot everybody whenever they come across a situation, and behave responsibly when there is a situation. That they try to take the broader view. But you can see why people are frightened because they're being threatened and bullied and told we can do this, we can shoot your dog. In fact, we had a case where a chap's wife rang him, deeply distressed. The police were there saying that they were going to shoot his greyhound because it had killed a cat. Well, that is not even a recognisable offence because cats have a right to roam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it wasn't even something that could be processed through the courts. But the woman was so intimidated that she rang her husband and he came back. By this time, they'd got the vet and they'd shot the dog.
Oh,
they'd broken the law. They've broken the law.
Oh, that's dreadful.
And somewhere up in your part of the world, two men fishing saw two, I'm not sure whether they were Alaska Malamutes or Siberian Huskies, but they were in a field chasing sheep, which of course they shouldn't be. Nobody was with them. Reported it to the police. The police came out and they shot the dogs in the street. So one, a criminal offence to fire firearms in a public place. And B, they didn't have the right to do it anyway, and it cost that police force a lot of money.
Good grief.
For compensation.
Yeah.
Doubtless the owners of the dogs would have been prosecuted, but that wasn't the way to do it.
No.
You can't take the law. And I even had a solicitor rang me. She said she'd got a client sitting with her whose golden retriever had got out through the fence at the back into the field at the back. And the police had come and said he was going to shoot it. And she rang me because she wasn't sure whether he could or not.
Oh.
I said, well, put him on the phone.
And you put him straight on?
So, oh, definitely. He's probably still not trying to straighten out the wrinkles, I think. But time I've chewed him up and spit him out. But nevertheless.
So it sounds like the poodle martyrs got off fairly lightly, or dreadful though it was.
Yes. Oh,
they got off lightly? Yes. Gosh.
Yes, because they would. And, of course, once somebody's taken your dog, they're not allowed to know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, and when the DDA was on in full force, I mean, the most heinous things went on then. I won't even tell you because you wouldn't want to. It'd probably make you sick. But at that time, when they were seizing anything and everything, and some of those dogs died in custody under the most horrific circumstances.
Mm.
And bodies were returned to people and because they were told that they'd been poisoned. One girl with a Labrador, the case was thrown out and she went to get a dog. Oh, it's died.
Oh.
She took the body straight to Trevor Turner, the Crofts vet. When he opened it up, there wasn't an organ left in the body.
Oh my God.
Taken it out to cover up the evidence.
Oh.
There's been the most appalling things you would never, ever believe could happen.
Yeah.
No.
Well, it sounds like dog owners desperately need someone like you.
Well, I'm the only one. I'm the only organisation in the world that does this. And I'm helping people overseas to set up similar organisations. But you see, you know, the trouble is you have to take on the establishment and the establishment don't like us.
Mm.
But somebody has to do it. I mean, but I am a voice in the wilderness and sometimes I get very tired. But I'm not going to get the violin out because there's no point. I mean, if it's too hot in the kitchen, you get out, don't you? And I'm not ready to go yet because what else? Where else are these people going to go? Solicitors charge in excess of £200 an hour, and most of them don't know what they're doing anyway. I don't charge anything except £20 a year for an organisation. Well, I think that's a pretty fair rate, really.
Yes, yeah.
And then they've got the advice they could go to a solicitor who would probably take £200 off them and say, well, I don't really know what I can do. Because they're hopeless. I've got a girl at the moment desperately needing a solicitor on a civil matter regarding her dog because her partner's left her and taken her dog with him and is using the dog for blackmail. And I said, well, you need to get a restraining order against him anyway, and you need to get an emergency court order for access to the dog to make sure she's okay.
Mm.
She's rung every solicitor she can think of, and nobody will tell her quotes because they don't know anything about dogs.
No.
It's goods.
Mm.
It's goods.
Mm.
It's part of the communal home property.
Mm.
And they won't do it. And I get so angry. Interference with goods, Zach. That's what they need to do. And I've had solicitors on the phone. Well, what do you think? Interference with goods. Oh, I'd forgotten all about that.
Mm.
I said, well, go and find a book. You know, crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
Anne is the legal expert with the UK magazine Dogs Monthly. And if you have a legal problem you would like her help with, we can pass her contact details on to you or email us and we'll talk to her on the show again. If I ever find myself in dog-related trouble with the law, I'd be very glad of having Anne on my side. And then there's the personal question so many of Lassie's fans want to ask. Is he allowed on the furniture? Of course he is. But then, he's the one who paid for it. Julia Glass.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. We start today with dogs behaving badly. A naughty husky was caught on CCTV in South Carolina, USA, helping herself in a shop. The dog, named Akira, picked out a rawhide bone and made a getaway without paying. Her family realized something was amiss when she arrived home with the bone and took her back to the shop. Staff identified Akira as the canine criminal, and on being set loose in the shop, she made straight for the bones again. Her family paid for the bone she had taken, so luckily Akira escaped the jailhouse.
Although she might be in the doghouse for a while. In Ontario, Canada, a dog was busy breaking and entering through the cat flap. The pit bull terrier type dog frightened a mother and a daughter inside the house, as well as terrifying their cat. Finally, they managed to trap the dog in the bathroom, and police later removed him.
Meanwhile, police in North Dakota, USA, were called to help a dog who had used a bank of snow to access the roof of his house. Officers lured the dog down onto a lower roof, but had to notify the owner, who then persuaded him all the way down.
Things were no better in the UK, with Kent officers being called in to help capture some wild hunting dogs who had escaped from Howlett's Wild Animal Park. In all, 20 hunting dogs had made it to freedom. 12 were recaptured, while vets had to use tranquilizer darts on a further 5. 3 remained on the loose and seemed determined to stay that way. Apparently, the animals, known as dholes, are fox-like in their appearance and behavior and pose no risk to the public.
Another search for a missing canine is ongoing in the UK. John and Shelley Haggerwood have turned to a psychic for help in finding their missing Braco Italiano, Jacob. The couple have taken unpaid leave from work and spent a fortune on publicity, even hiring a plane to carry out an aerial search. However, there has been no sighting of Jacob, who disappeared while chasing deer. Psychics have told the couple that their dog is alive and trying to come home to them, but have not been able to aid the search for him.
One owner who must have given up hope of ever seeing his dog again was John Gay from the Lake District in the UK. His Collie Cross dog, Dash, went missing in a blizzard on Helvellyn, the third highest mountain in England. After an amazing 12 days on the mountain, walkers encountered the dog, who has now been reunited with his delighted owner.
And finally, if you're a smoker who's struggling with the New Year's resolution to quit the weed, if you can't do it for yourself, then do it for your dog. The Henry Ford Center for Health Promotion and Disease Prevention in Detroit surveyed over 3,000 pet owners and found that over 25% of smokers would be more likely to stop smoking if they thought the habit was dangerous to their pet's health. Secondhand smoke is just as dangerous for pets as it is for people, raising the risks of breathing problems, cancer, and heart problems.
So, stub out your cigarettes and you'll avoid seeing your dog's health go up in smoke. And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
Dogs like to obey. It gives them security. James Herriot. We are now Twitterers. You can get updates about Dogcast Radio on Twitter. Our ID is Dogcast Radio, and you need to go to twitter.com/Dogcast Radio. If you're on Twitter, do come and say hello and we can follow each other's tweets. A story caught my eye in the news about a collie husky cross who was stuck on a ledge down a cliff. Two rescuers abseiled down, but the dog would have nothing to do with them. Then his owner revealed that he was frightened of men. So, a female rescuer was dispatched. And what I found touching was when she arrived, the dog jumped into her arms and licked her face. Poor thing, he must have been desperate to get back to his owner, but too frightened of men to let himself be saved by one. Let's hope he learns to like men, but steers clear of sheer drops from now on. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways.
By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
A hound dog and a Dalmatian were sitting in an internet cafe, and the Dalmatian said to the hound, "Hey, check out my website." The hound asked for the address, and the Dalmatian replied, www.dalmatian.com.